be able to send it to you in some digital form.
That would be great. Yeah, that would be, you each have a copy of it. So will I be getting one? I guess that I'm happy to have it recorded as long as we both have copies. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, great. So we can record it, and we both get copies of the tape that is produced, right?
Yes, right.
Okay. Excellent. God, we talked about so much stuff last week. I almost don't know where to start, but I did have a few questions that were still lingering around. Why do you teach evidence? Why did you pick that as your specialty? You could have picked anything in law as a place to specialize in. Why was it evidence that you chose?
Evidence is how you prove things.
Mm-hmm.
That's what truth is all about.
Truth is about proving things?
Yes.
Can we prove things?
We prove things to ourselves. We form beliefs about things. We create a process for joining our beliefs together. We use it to drive our judicial system.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an excellent thing to study. In a sense, it's a study of the jury, the American jury. In another sense, it's the study of the nature of law and truth. It allows me to make the connection with my students to the vision of their environment as a rhetorical space. Without that perception being too frightening.
So when you teach, by the end of the semester, what is it that you want your students to get out of your classes? What do you want? What if there was one thing they walked away with at the end of the semester, what would you want it to be?
I'd like it to be a spark of energy that pushes forward their purest instincts against the enveloping blankets of no.
Blankets of K-N-O-W or N-O?
N-O.
What do you mean by blankets of no?
All the barriers that keep you from thinking that you can make your dreams come true. Put more prosaically, that it's okay to feel an ambition to do good. And there are ways to stay with it right through the process.
So you want your students to resist the temptation to follow the beaten path, and you want them to do something different that would do good?
In a sense, yes, we'd like to free them from the beaten path, but really it's just in service of opening up the range within which they will express themselves.
So when you use things like rap music in your class, email on the overhead, scavenger hunt that your class did yesterday, what function did each of those serve? I guess we could start with each of those three. What were you trying to show?
So remind me of number one.
Rap music. Playing it on the radio and singing it on the desk and all the different ways you use it. What is it that you would say you're trying to get across with that or use it for?
Well, let's see. Historically, first it was music before it was rap music. And the introduction of music into my class was a way to soften the space, make it more friendly, make it more natural to move around, kind of cut against the static nature of the room, which epitomizes the teaching tradition of sit in your place, be quiet, take your turn.
We'll get back to the email and the scavenger hunt in a second, but along those lines, it reminds me of a question I wanted you to ask. Do you believe teachers can teach?
Yes, and let me answer it by following through the thread of your question on rap, which is, why rap? Rap initially came into my class with Grandmaster Flash and the Sugar Hill Gang, when what was being communicated was black intelligence. And just damn good music. And I totally adored that album. I particularly, it was a very good piece of work, I thought. And I totally enjoyed it, just personally. And I marveled at how much in the face of people who put down black intelligence that piece of work was. And I love the Jesse song. I thought the Jesse song, I can't believe he didn't make more out of it, to tell you the truth. It was just It was just wonderful. So that's how the rap came in. It came in recently here again, definitely a new thread of theme because of Cornell West and the debate that's going on right here in the school. And you say, can a teacher teach? Yes, if you imagine your student as an observer in rhetorical space, trying to find a way in life, and you imagine the teacher as one of those rhetorical points of light as the student learns. If the teacher can expand the student's vision by being a point outside the box that still relates, then the further outside the box and the stronger the relation, the more significant to the student the integration of the teacher's method, the teacher's message. Method, message, integrated, rhetorical space. Back again to where we began.
Mm-hmm. There's a very interesting phrase you used in that description. The further that it's that they're related, did I get that right? The further that they're related?
The further you are outside mm-hmm. the cluster
mm-hmm.
of their focus, you know, out here.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, strong relationship
mm-hmm.
so that the focus widens.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've taught something.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to email and use email and the overhead as an example. Draw a relation between that and Tortoise.
In this morning's class,
mm-hmm.
we listened to John Jessam
mm-hmm.
speak of digital discovery, digital secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
The dilemma of managers who need to use the most fluid communications technology,
mm-hmm.
and yet want to control the information trail they leave behind.
Mm-hmm.
That's all about email.
Mm-hmm. How does that all relate to tort law?
Tort law is built on the idea that a plaintiff's lawyer can prove, that's evidence,
mm-hmm.
that a company did something wrong. That's tort.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have the whole stroke or you don't get there.
And what about the scavenger hunt yesterday? What was that designed to show?
Well, first it was designed to occupy a slot, respectively, even though I wasn't there physically. I was in Jamaica. Then, within the design, the idea was to break the class up into groups about the size of juries. Then set them a task that I thought challenging and relevant to our subject of instruction. Together with some process rules. That reflect the rules of process we use in law. That's basically enough. See what happens.
Sure. And you sent out an email about the scavenger hunt on Sunday night, right?
Right.
Yeah, I read it. And I was going to ask you, is it okay if I use the email as part of the article? Do I have permission to do that?
You have my permission to do that.
Excellent. Let's say I was a student in your class, and I, you know, checked my email Sunday night. I saw that email. I read it. I came to class Monday, and I did the activity. Do you think I understand what I was doing and why?
Depends entirely what you mean by understand. If you mean in the very act of their doing it, could they somehow see themselves in the context of doing it? No, not possible. But having done it, would they have had a common experience on which they could look back? Yes. And were they having fun when they were doing it? That latter being my first concern when I
So the fun, the latter part, you are having fun while you're doing it, that's your first concern?
It wasn't my first concern. It was just my first concern when I came back to see how it worked out.
Okay.
You know, mm-hmm. when I got my first email from Anil.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I got one before that, I think. It was just a hint that it had gone well. And
So you think it went well and you're pleased with what happened and you think the students learned and understood from what they did?
No, I don't go that far.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we had I call it a learning experience. I don't know that I promise that everyone integrates every piece of every separable strand of message that I try and put out there.
Have you ever considered bringing it together more explicitly on your own? And if you have and decided not to, what made you make that decision?
I don't have any sense of it being static. It's not like it's there and I bring it together. It's like, much more like you're always trying to figure out some new problem. Like, I hadn't done a scavenger hunt before. This was a hunt of a kind, not exactly scavenger.
So, are you kind of saying that if you were to bring it together more explicitly, then it would destroy exactly what you're trying to do?
No, I think I'm actually... It seems more conceptual than that to me. It seems that what it is I'm trying to represent, I ultimately represent in how I act.
So as you said before,
and ultimately I can't explain my actions any better than anyone else can. Ultimately it comes down to whether you feel like you're a force for good or evil.
So as you said before, your method and your message are together in a rhetorical space. And if you change your method, the message wouldn't get across as well because it's intertwined with the method. Is that also what you're trying to say?
I don't know if I'm trying to say it. I just think it's true.
Mm-hmm. But that's how you see it.
Yes.
Okay.
That's and I think it's true with everyone else. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, If I can wind up having my students, for instance, I one of the pieces of music that I like to play is The Gambler.
Yeah, Kenny Rogers.
Right, because it's about reading people's faces. Mm-hmm. It's about really being in a space with other people and really taking them in.
Now, it's interesting, like, when you talk to your students, both your past students and your present students, some of them, when you ask them, what are you learning from Professor Nesson, what does he teach you, will say we learn about perspectives and how that affects the way we see things. We learn about how the lawyer should be a storyteller. We learn how it's important for us to be active parts of the legal process. All things with which I think are part of what you're trying to show, the totality of what you're trying to show. But then you talk to other students, and they'll say, Professor Nesson is lazy, he's crazy, he's whack, just comes to class and is playing tricks on us, why do you think they walk away with that conclusion?
Lazy, because they see that I don't come in with classes planned in the way they see other professors do. And they don't see me writing law review articles. What was number two?
Whacked, exactly. Whacked. Whacked.
Whacked depends on what you mean by whacked. In at least one version of whacked, I plead guilty. Number three.
It's because it wasn't on my original list. That Professor Nesson, this is both a quote and a general perception, he's just an old man bored with his job. He's a tenured professor, can just come in and do what he wants, and is using his class maybe as a way to send a message, but also as a way to just thumb his nose at the establishment, but is really doing it at students' expense.
Let me see. I'm sure it's possible to see it that way. I am old, 63. I am tenured. I do believe that overcoming fear of authority is equivalent to expanding the space. I would be bored if I just did what I was told. I see that sort of mischief. The expense of the students, I don't really think so. That leaves out of the equation any value that one might credit me with putting in what I teach. And ultimately, any value that I put in the role of being a teacher.
What do you think is the biggest misconception students have about you?
Well, perhaps there's paradox in this, but I think the biggest misconception they have about me is that I'm crazy.
So you know exactly what you're doing when you walk into that class.
No, I only appear to. And sometimes I appear not to.
There are obviously plenty of conceptions and misconceptions about Charan and Dharsan. And there's another one I want to ask you about too. Some people say you do drugs. Some people say...
I'm shocked.
Some people say that you... Well, first of all, do you do drugs?
No, just exactly what do you mean?
I mean any substance that is against U.S. law to be used.
Well, my drug history goes back to, I guess, in that sense. I guess it would have been 1966 when I first smoked marijuana and then did LSD later. It's like 69, something like that, when it came along with the period. I tried cocaine once and got nothing from it. And that was that. And I've tried ecstasy and amphetamine, some in college. I remember Dexedrine got me through the statistics. And that's basically it. I don't do any drugs now except marijuana. Not that I wouldn't, I just don't.
So you do use marijuana?
I do use marijuana.
Do you ever use it before coming to class? In a couple hours before you come to class?
I'm a man who likes to get up in the morning and go for a morning walk. On the walks, I talk to myself and to other audiences. I'm on an Olympus DM1 recorder, such as is right here, recording us. In fact, this is the very one. I often do that walking in Mount Auburn Cemetery.
I've been there, that's right.
And if my classes are like, well, this one this year starts at 10, I'll usually get up at 5 and go out and walk at Filippello Park in Watertown. and many of the tapes that I make that comprise Charlie's journal. Which is a form of internet radio account of a teacher's life at a place like Harvard Law School in this day and age. It's like a blog, you know, it's like my blog.
It's like your diary.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what it is. My digital diary. And it's one of the forms of track that I know I'm laying down. Whether it's worth anything or not, who knows? But, you know, people write books and people do this and they leave their message one way or another. And so mine I leave on the recorder. And, before I get too far along my walk, I'm likely to have smoked a puff or two of a joint.
A puff or two?
That's all it takes, my boy.
And this is in the morning before class.
I will do it on the morning when I have class coming up.
Have you before?
I will do it on a morning when I don't.
Have you done it before in the morning when you have class?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, do you mind if I look at this for a minute? I just want to make sure that it's recording. I just want to make sure, because you're saying a lot of things that are, where the precise words are important. I want to make sure it's recording. It's recording?
Yes, it's recording.
Okay, excellent. Have you ever talked to your colleagues or told your colleagues about that? That you sometimes take a puff or two in the morning before class?
Well, I'd say no. But I think that I don't want to go farther down that line of question, because I would like to respect the confidentiality of my
relations with the faculty.
Yes,
absolutely.
But I do emphasize that no is the answer to that question.
Got it. Fair enough. And finally, when you wrote the email that I read, or you wrote to your class on Sunday, had you smoked before writing that? At the time you were writing that email?
I actually wrote that email at two different times. Mm-hmm. Before I left for Jamaica, I wanted to be sure that I had an outline of activities that would actually work. And then in Jamaica on Sunday, after excuse me, returning from the Fiti Sing festival that we went to Port Antonio to observe.
Fiti Sing?
It's Yes, it's a...
Well, anyway, it's not important now. It's just mumbling. Keep going. In Port Antonio. Okay. After you got back from that?
I was at Henry's Rio Vista Villa with Ben Walker and Henry and my wife Fern. Having a wonderful conversation on the veranda, but worried that I needed to get this message out to my class. So, dropped down to our villa for a few moments and took the outline and more or less worked it and framed it a little bit and put the voice that I wanted on it, and then came up and wrestled with getting it out through Henry's telephone system. From Jamaica, it's no easy thing.
Yeah, it's not the same as here.
No, it's not. It's not.
Emailed out. But had you, before you sent the email out, before you sent out this piece of work of class assignments, had you smoked at the festival, or had you smoked afterwards at the veranda, on the veranda?
The festival was awash in marijuana. It was a celebration of marijuana.
Did you smoke marijuana there?
I did.
And then after the festival, you went back to the veranda, and at the veranda you sent out the email. When you sent out the email, were you still influenced by the marijuana, do you think?
I wouldn't be completely surprised. I have to say, Jamaican marijuana is, at least to me, of the same quality as Jamaica Blue Mountain coffee.
That is to say, good quality?
Yes. Yes. Extraordinary. And very expressive of Jamaica.
Really interesting. Wow. So what's in store this rest of the semester for your class, for your work, for your adventures? What else is in store for Charlie Nelson?
We just have to have faith in the future, don't we? We're letting the future catch up with the time.
And we have to have faith and make it a better place.
That's the idea.
Boy, Professor Nestor, I almost have to go. I have reading to do for my class at 5. Just one last thing to ask you. Did you ever see the movie Man on the Moon? Have you ever heard of the comedian Andy Kaufman?
I've certainly heard of Andy Kaufman and Man on the Moon.
You like it?
Oh, it's brilliant. Incredibly brilliant.
I knew that you were going to say that. Well.
And the R.E.M. song.
Oh, where the movie title was taken from?
Andy, Sniff and Glue. Totally brilliant.
You're an interesting guy. Well, thank you so much. If you could send me a copy of the recording.
All right, now you're going to have to send me an email so that I am able to attach something and send it back to you.
Oh, wow. If I send you an email in just a couple minutes, will you send it right back over with the recording?
Well, no, I've got to take it out of here. Mm-hmm. I've got to put it through my machine. I've got to convert it to a WAV file. I've got to compress it to an MP3 file. Mm-hmm. And then I've got to email it to you.
Boy, jeez, I didn't realize it was so much. Wow.
Now tell me who you are.
Ah, no problem. I'm Owen Alterman. I'm a first-year student.
Yeah?
What do you want to know about me?
This is for the record.
This is for the record, yes. I'm writing a column for the record. It's my first column, so I'm looking forward to it and proud.
So what kind of trouble do you think is going to start here, Owen?
Well, guess we don't know the future yet. We'll have to see. I don't know. What kind of trouble do you think we're going to start? Or you're going to start? Or this article's going to start? Put it in the third person.
It's going to start a lot of trouble with my wife. Poor Fran.
Yeah.
And who knows? It may be the stone that cracks the glass and the whole thing blows away. I don't know.
Well, we'll have to see. But thank you so much.
Okay.
As I think you understand, I really want the recording. Is there a way you could get it to me? My deadline for the story is tonight. Is there a way I could... I mean, the story, I'll be honest, Professor Ness and I wrote almost... I knew from talking to you last time, I could almost predict what you were going to say to almost all of the questions, so I wrote most of it already, but I just want to touch it up. But I'd like the recording by the time I send the...
All right, well, you just stick right here. That's
sure.
All I can say. Hold on. You should observe the process here.
I'd love to.
I open my Olympus DM1 DSS, whatever the hell it is, player 200. If I can get it open, where is it? There we are. See that? Then I plug my gizmo in here, but first I gotta stop it.
Okay, we're on?
We're on.
Okay. Professor Nestor, when you say that you sometimes take a puff or two on a joint in your morning walks before class, would you say that then when you come to class, you're still influenced by the marijuana?
I would say that's possible sometimes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. You can add that to the record. Just like she's still there. David Rosenberg's book.
Yes, indeed.
I've only seen photocopies. I've never seen the real thing. How about that? We read from it all the time in our class.
I'd go further, Owen. I'd say yes.
Yes, you are under the influence of pot.
No, your question was, have I ever come to class under the influence of marijuana? That is, having smoked, does that have some effect on how I'm acting in class? I'd say the answer is yes.
Have you done it?
Thank you.
Recently?
Oh, that's only one question to
ask. All right, fair enough.